Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Death of Death, where we proclaim Christ's victory over sin, death, and everything else. I'm your host, Nick Stewart. I just wanted to apologize for the lack of an episode on Tuesday. We're in the middle of moving and driving across halfway across the country and stuff. I just wanted to give this episode a brief introduction. Interviewing my friend Trevor, and it looks like this is going to be a three-part episode because we really get into a lot of stuff. So this week we're going to talk about his history with skepticism and kind of how he thought through Christianity as an unbeliever and how that was ultimately reconciled. Next week we're going to get into when he worked at a church and was ultimately at the heart of a huge expose of corruption among certain leaders there, and how that all worked out. And then in the third episode, we're going to get into some problems he's had with his health and how God has worked that out and what God has done with that. So I just wanted to give you a little preamble that this week is going to be a shorter episode just talking about skepticism, and then there's more to come for the next 2 weeks. So Trevor, was a teacher at a church. I led worship in some of his Bible studies back when we were at the same church, and he's a very gifted speaker and teacher and just an all-around very smart guy. So I know that you guys will enjoy this. So let's get into it now. Everybody, and welcome to the Death of Death, where we proclaim Christ's victory over sin, death, and everything else. I'm joined today by my good friend Trevor Wright, who doesn't know what we're going to talk about yet, but I know
this isn't the Reformed podcast.
No. That's the last door on the left. Yeah, you brought a beer and everything. I've been trying to get Trevor to do an episode of this podcast since years before this podcast existed, and we were going to talk about joy, and at one point we were going to talk about poetry because that's something that I know very little about, but you're an expert in.
Yep, so, I fooled you.
Yeah. So first off, I know that you have a brief history as a skeptic, so why don't you just tell me a little bit about your time in community college and leaving the church in your adolescence and some of the thought process behind that.
Going back to the community college. I feel like faith has never been something that's come easy to me, at least since I started taking it seriously. I think there was a moment when I was 18 that I kind of had a little bit more self-awareness about my own beliefs about the world and came to the realization that if God existed, then that was more important than any other thing that I believed. And if he didn't, then why was I, saying I believed that? So it got really important for me. I think I assumed a lot of things about the world and about belief in God that at the time just didn't really add up for me. But there was a strong emotional draw towards belief in God, but went to community college. I actually was a high school dropout, and
good
community college was my kind of back door into thoughts of maybe going to university one day. So went there and found out that I really enjoyed literature and philosophy and got really good grades in those classes, but didn't get good grades in anything else. And in my philosophy class, that's where I kind of realized how shallow of an idea that I had of God, and was challenged with the probabilistic problem of evil. Not just that evil existed, but that there were seemingly evils that existed that had no real additive purpose to human flourishing or anything like that. Take like wildfires, for example, where a squirrel is burning to death in agony and nobody's there to actually know that that's happening, but surely enough, you know, wild animals are dying, and why would any god but benevolent and kind create a world in which squirrels are... Are you thinking about the squirrel that I killed on a retreat?
I thought that was a chipmunk, and I was going to make a joke about that, but yeah. But what I really
That's another story.
What I really thought was, what if I had just never considered a squirrel burning in a wildfire, and I was just done
and
with God?
And that just destroyed you, man. That just wrecked you.
In 2 minutes flat, you convinced me not to believe in God because of the squirrel.
If you believe in God, you just have to believe in a God that would burn a squirrel.
I think I do.
Yeah. I think I do. At that time in my life, there wasn't any real concept of a theology of the fall or a theology of what kind of world we live in because of sin and because of our alienation and separation from God, and whether or not it was all the probabilistic problem of evil was all premised on the belief that if God existed, he's the most perfect being and therefore would create the most perfect world. And, you know, if you find things that are malfunctioning within this world, that is a kind of strike against that idea of God being this all perfect being, because look at that, you have a blind spot in your eye. Why would God create you with a blind spot in your eye? That serves no functional purpose, you know, for you, and could probably be better explained by the fact that all this is just kind of randomly in quotations there, randomly, for all of our evolutionist friends listening that wouldn't actually use that term, come together. Why would God allow something like that? So having that kind of an idea of God, that he must be the most perfect being possible, therefore he wouldn't create shoddy work. And, you know, as somebody who had a very shallow Christian faith that was already teetering on maybe believing, maybe not, the idea that, you know, that perfect God would have to create something that was as perfect as possible, and then seeing such glaring flaws, it just, you'd have to do some cartwheels to try to protect that kind of a theology. So
yeah, kind of stopping at Genesis 2.
Yeah. So, and then from there, there were more challenges to my faith, the hiddenness of God that I hadn't had a real experience, you know, of God was a pretty significant thing. He seemed a lot more real to other people that I knew that believed in him. And I kind of just wrote that off on them having a psychological experience that they called God. Asked some Christian friends about those things at the time, and there weren't a lot of clear answers from those friends. And, you know, it was probably expecting a little bit too much out of people at that time to just give me the answer that I wanted. I had to actually do some work on that for myself, but enjoyed that time of distance from God after that, kind of walked away. I felt like, you know, didn't really have to give myself too much to the sacrificing of my own desires, kind of lived for myself for a bit. Mm-hmm. That's how that all kicked off for a while.
So then you end up back in the church, you end up coming around to Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Was that mostly through your mom, or was that dialogue?
So my mom was the whole reason that I grew up with this kind of just kind of inclination towards believing in God, mm-hmm. just because my mom believed in my dad. You know, statistically, if your dad disbelieves, then you're going to disbelieve.
Really?
If he believes, yeah. Statistically speaking, if the father is a believer in God, usually the children tend to follow suit in that. Mm. And that is true for my sister and my brother. They don't believe in God. My dad doesn't. My mom did, and I think it may have had, leaving the supernatural side of things out of it, it may have been that my dad wasn't really present a whole lot as a kid, so I didn't really see him as an authority on a whole lot of things. But my mom talked with me a lot about God, and you know, had me go to church when I was a kid. Of course, I stopped going to church at the same time that my brother and my sister did, because who wants to go to church when everybody's playing video games at home on a Sunday?
Tell the story of seeing your brother play video games put a bow tie on.
Yeah, exactly. Why, you know, I'm getting dressed up in my color coordinator 90s apparel, and my brother's at home playing video games. So that all stopped, and had brief instances with youth groups and junior high and stuff like that, because there were girls that I liked that went there. Yeah. Came back around, you know, honestly, it's kind of hard for me, and it's probably because it happened in stages, but mm-hmm. I think there was a draw for me, simply because the idea of God was placed in me as a child from my mom, and always kind of had thoughts of why things were happening, and if there was any way to really bring into unison like the disparities of life. And I think as human beings, we want to bring those disparities together. We want there to be, you know, either by ignoring a whole lot of them so that, you know, we keep our sanity and, you know, we kind of put our blinders on and stay in the bubble, or by actually doing, you know, some hard work and thinking through you know, whatever, you know, philosophy or whatever to tie that together. But for me, it was never okay, you know, just to live in the moment and to mm-hmm. go day by day. I wanted to know what was happening was meaningful and purposeful, and that kept pushing me back towards the idea of there being something behind the curtain, basically. Yeah,
it's you know, I won't say that Christianity perfectly scratches every itch all the time.
Sometimes it creates them.
Sometimes it scratches itches you didn't know you had.
Yeah.
But it is incredibly satisfying for the most amount of itches I think a person can experience. I think that's ultimately where people like C.S. Lewis ended up, was this simply did just answer the most questions.
Yeah. And it might not even be the most as much as the most significant.
Yeah.
You know,
that's better
said. It might be that you're left with, you know, more doubts than certainty. But if the things that you can be certain about are the things that matter even on your deathbed, then maybe those are the best things worth living for as well. And, you know, obviously you don't just believe those things for the sake of that. You want it to actually be true. You can't lie to yourself. You can't have that cognitive dissonance to, you know, ground your life in that way. You have to actually believe it. And, you know, you want those things to actually be true. Mm-hmm. But I think it's John 6, where Jesus is talking about eating my, you know, to be my disciple, you have to eat my body and drink my blood. And a whole bunch of people are like, this guy is a weirdo and I'm out of here, you know. And the response of the disciples after Jesus asks them, are you going to leave as well? They don't say, listen, we know what you're talking about. You're not literally talking about your, you know, your body. You're not literally talking about your blood. This is going to be a little wafer thing with some cranberry juice in the future. We get it. You know, they didn't know the answer as to why Jesus was saying those weird, gruesome things. The response was, where else are we going to go? You have the words of eternal life. So in that instance, it wasn't, we have all the answers, we know what you're talking about. It was, we don't have the answers for what you just brought up, but we're really certain that you answer something so foundational and significant over here that we're willing to keep with you, even though you just weirded us out big time. Yeah. And I feel like that's kind of been my Christian experience. This is just the Bible and Jesus has weirded me out big time and caused a lot of questions for me. But at the end of it, it's given me something where I I think on most days, the most significant things about what it means to be a human, what it means to be good, what it means for something to be bad and evil are drawn together in a way that I haven't found to come together in any other philosophy. So,
yeah. We're in the church. A few years go by, and then some sort of very so
this is,
specific
this is
plot.
A biocast. That's what we're doing.
Is that what that is?
A biocast.
I feel like a very concerted effort from every angle of your entire life was pitted against you all at once in order to eradicate you from the earth. Because you really went through a whole lot in a very, very short period of time. So I don't know what of that you're comfortable sharing, but
yeah,
you know, it started with some issues at church.
Yeah, I won't name any names or names of places, but
I'll do it in post.
Yeah, will you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it actually went on for a lot longer than a lot of people know because I knew things before they actually came.
All right, guys, as much as I love to leave you hanging on that note, I do hate to leave you hanging on this note because I wanted to give you a little cliffhanger to be continued effect there, but we gotta save all this for the next week's episode because it's just too long to get into now. But I am really excited for this story to get out because it really is the best format for Trevor to tell the truth that a lot of people tried to tell, and they were maligned, and, you know, lies were made up about them in order to, you know, call their reliability into question, and, you know, ridiculous stories about them, you know, basically coming against the Lord's anointed. So, you know, just a lot went down. And even if he had chosen to write a really long social media post, it just wouldn't have done it justice the way that this kind of interview format could. So even though we weren't really planning on it, I'm glad that this is where the episode ended up going. Because it's going to be good for this, for the truth to finally get out, even though we don't name names. That being said, that's going to do it for this week's episode. I've been your host, Nick, here to tell you that sometimes squirrels burn to death for no reason. And if you're as committed to Christ's victory as I am, I'll be here to do it with you all again next week. Goodbye for now.